Welcome and thank you for standing by. At this time, all lines are open and interactive. When not speaking, please utilize your mute button. If you do not have a mute button, please press star 6 to mute and unmute your line. Today's conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. Now I'd like to turn the meeting over to Ms. Bonita White. Ma'am, you may begin.
Good afternoon, everyone. This is Bonita V. White, Director of Diversity and Inclusion for the Department of Health and Human Services. Thank you for joining us for our day-to-day diversity and inclusion lunch and learn series. We're very happy to have a special speaker with us today, Mr. Mark Gorkin, who is going to present on the topic cross-cultural diversity. And we're delighted that so many of you have taken time out of your busy schedules to be with us. Just before I turn it over to Mr. Gorkin, I want to mention a few things. First and foremost, I should have said Happy New Year because I haven't talked to you all this year. Secondly, I want to remind you that this is one of a series of lunch and learn presentations that we've been doing actually since October of 2015. So we are about to enter our eighth cycle of six-month presentations. And we have requested, using our human-centered design model, we requested those of you who would be interested in suggesting topics to let us know, topics or speakers, that you think would be good for us setting up our next schedule of six events. We have had really great success with particular topics like the workplace personality types, conflict, and cooperation. We had something like 939 participants for that one. Our second highest was the understanding unconscious bias, and I think that was maybe 830-something. And then our third highest was anti-bullying, or we also called it bullying prevention techniques, and that numbered in the 700s. So we know that these are topics that you all are interested in, and we want to make sure that we deliver the types of things that you want to know about. If you have any comments, suggestions, recommendations, just send us an email at diversity@hhs.gov. And also, if you are interested in being on our listserv, we send notices out to everyone by way of our HHS D&I listserv. We also have a global listserv. We have people who are joining us from other federal agencies as well. And you will be updated on all of our events and activities. So send us an email, diversity@hhs.gov, if you want to sign up for that. Tomorrow, I want to let you know that we are continuing what we started last week, which was our Martin Luther King Jr. Speaks series. And the way that we set that up is that you can join us virtually by clicking on the links to some of the selected speeches and interviews, or you can come in person and watch the videos with us and be a part of our discussion group. Even if you're not able to come in person and you want to look at it at your desk, at your leisure or on demand, you can still join us for the discussion group after these screenings. The screenings and group discussion that we're doing for our virtual Martin Luther King Jr. observance throughout this month have been set up because we know that many of you are going to participate in observing the Martin Luther King holiday, but you have never heard a speech or a complete speech by Dr. King. You know about him, but you don't know why, for example, he was deemed worthy of having a holiday established in his honor. So we want you to have that opportunity to hear directly, and that's why we call it Martin Luther King Jr. Speaks, hear some of his speeches and get information about some of his philosophies on a number of different topics. So we did put a schedule out for the screenings that we are going to have. Tomorrow's the 17th. We'll have another set of screenings on the 24th and then another on the 31st. And the Division of Diversity and Inclusion will be doing these presentations in collaboration with the Administration for Children and Families, Office of Diversity Management, and EEO, and we're very happy to have one of the foremost employees in that office with us today in the person of Mr. Edgar Reese.
Thank you, Max.
Yes. So hopefully you will be able to find time in your schedule to join us for the Martin Luther King Speaks series. And if you're keeping up with Lunch and Learn, you know that next month's Lunch and Learn series is going to be February the 20th, Mentoring Circles, with our presenter, Reginald R. Mebane, who is the Director of the Equal Opportunity with Centers for Disease Control. This is, I believe, the third time that we will be doing Mentoring Circles. That's a very popular topic, too. And then in March, we're going to have a State of the Agency address where we will have Mr. John Grill, the Director of Data Analytics and Reporting, let us know about what is going on at HHS in our workforce and representation of various groups. And while I'm speaking about what's going on at HHS, I just remembered that you may not be aware, you may not have heard, the results came out in December that HHS once again has been named one of the best places to work in federal government, still number two behind NASA, number one. NASA has 20,000 employees. We have 90,000. NASA sends people on the moon, and we take care of health down here on the ground. So I don't know when our number two is going to take over number one, because NASA has been number one for 10 years, and they got quite a few things on us. But we are striving, and our leadership is determined that we are going to overtake that number one position. We have had quite a few increases across the board in the different categories in the Federal Employee Viewpoint Survey. And so we are pleased about that. Of course, the employee engagement category and the new inclusion quotient that measures achievements related to diversity and inclusion, we've been number one in those categories the last couple of years, and we're very appreciative of your support in that regard. Now that I have covered those preliminaries, let us move forward to our speaker and topic for today. Again, the topic is cross-cultural diversity, and our presenter is Mark Gorkin, who is a licensed clinical social worker. He's also known as the Stress Doc. He's an acclaimed keynote and kickoff speaker, as well as motivational humorist and team communication catalyst. He's known for his interactive, inspiring, and fun programs for both government agencies and major corporations. In addition, the Stress Doc is a team building and organizational development consultant. He is providing stress and communication, as well as managing change, leadership, and team building programs for the 1st Cavalry Division and 13th Expeditionary Support Command, Fort Hood, Texas, and for Army Community Services and Family Advocacy Programs at Fort Meade, Maryland, and Fort Belvoir, Virginia, as well as Andrews Air Force Base Behavioral Medicine Services. Mark has also rotated as a military and family life consultant at Fort Campbell, Kentucky. He's a former stress and violence prevention consultant for the U.S. Postal Service And the stress doc is the author of Practice Safe Stress and the Four Faces of Anger. You can see his award-winning USA Today online hot site called A Workplace Resource by tuning into National Public Radio or going on their website. He has a lot of great information that he's going to share with us today, and I'm going to turn it over to him immediately. Thank you so much, The Stress Doc.
Thank you. Thank you, Benita. You know, Benita mentioned that I'm a licensed clinical social worker, and one of the things that I remember very early on in my training, it was a saying that said, start where the client is. And so before I start directly talking about cross-cultural diversity, I would like to open up the floor for the moment to people sitting in this room and to all you folks out in the netherworld. How are you doing with this furlough? That's on everybody's mind. I remember over the years I've been involved with certain crises in the federal government. In the early 90s, it was the U.S. Postal Service that was downsizing by 50,000 people. And I remember they almost created like a leper colony for those people that weren't in a job, hadn't been let go, and were sort of in purgatory. And I remember one young manager had been in a kind of a management sort of acceleration training program, said, you know, I once had a career path, then this boulder fell from the sky and crushed it. It was a lot of rage, a lot of uncertainty, a lot of feeling of being abandoned. And I think it's important, you know, I mean, on one hand, we have to keep a stiff upper lip, and on the other hand, we need a chance to vent from the lip and really turn to one another as much as possible in this uncertain time. And even though, obviously, the people that are here and you all out there are working, but we don't know if you're getting paid, but you're working. But you know what? There's this big, big question mark, this uncertainty. What's going to happen next? How long is this going to go on? Will I be eventually impacted? These are very human questions to be asking. So anyway, I'll stop blabbing and just say if anybody wants to make a comment, whether in this room or, you know, at long distance, please feel free. Because I know this is, we need to be able to talk about it. Just keeping it bottled up inside is not a formula for mind-body wellness. Maybe I just needed to say it, but I have a feeling I wasn't just talking to hear myself talk. So know that at any point, if I say anything that strikes a chord or that you disagree with, please feel free to jump in. Okay, so the topic, and I'm going to still try to structure this topic, because cultural diversity, if you notice on the slide, it says inner and outer diversity and inclusion. What the heck is he talking about? Well, outer diversity is, of course, the organizational policy, procedure, practices, personnel. But I'm also saying, and especially in times of stress and crisis, we need to be building our inner diversity, different aspects of our personality, our communication styles, our cognitive styles. We need to be evolving and strengthening and diversifying. And that's my approach, that there's kind of like a person and situation perspective on diversity. So that's where I'm coming from. I don't know if you can read some of the key points. We're going to talk about leadership and know I and team, perceptions of diversity, letting go, which is, I think, a key aspect of survival in difficult times. In fact, let me share this. Anybody remember when they broke up Ma Bell in the 80s? Well, I'm not the only senior in this room. Okay. This psychologist, Suzanne Kielbasa, did a study. She wanted to find out why some executives were really having a very difficult time with all that breakup and uncertainty and what's going to happen next, and others seemed to weather the storm pretty well. And she came up with four factors that I kind of called the four C's of psychological hardiness. I think I have it in a future slide, but maybe I don't. Maybe I do. I don't. So let me just tell you what those four C's are. First, conditioning. No, first, commitment. And this is very important. These execs, while they were, you know, still taking their work seriously, they weren't the ones that were staying in the workplace 20 hours a day and night in the hopes that people will reward them for this heroic service. They were committed to some work-life balance. They worked hard, but they did not just try to sacrifice themselves for the company. They stay committed to their family, their support system. And I've seen this where I've been involved in when there was the bubble burst in the late 90s, early 2000s in the tech industry. And when there was a lot of downsizing and uncertainty, especially these young people would stay in 20 hours a day working nonstop. I'll be rewarded. And those were the ones that burnt out the worst because they weren't rewarded. And so their whole existential sense of meaning floated. So don't lose sight of balance. Second, they had a realistic sense of control. They knew things were going to change. It wasn't going to be business as usual. This wasn't one of those, oh, they always talk about reorganizing, but, you know, things will settle down. It'll be, no. This was different. It was going to be some profound changes. And so they had a more realistic, they recognized sooner than their less aware colleagues that I'm going to have to adapt to some real changes. Even though I don't like it, that's the way I'm going to, you know, at least find out if I can survive and if I want to survive in this environment. Third, how did they get that realistic sense of control? They understood the change process. They were the ones that were able to do early anticipatory grieving. They dealt with their shock. They dealt with the, you know, how could this be? They dealt with their loss, their sense of confusion, disorientation. They got past the denial. And then they realized, okay, what are some of my options now? But you have to do some of that grief work to really be ready to confront change. And I'll talk a little bit more about my strategy for dealing with loss and change. And finally, conditioning. These folks were the ones that were getting regular physical exercise. That's really a bottom line survival strategy. We know not only that we know about, you know, cardiovascular benefits and endorphin, you know, biochemical benefits, but think about it. When everything's up in the air and everything feels uncertain, what do I need? I need to be grounded. I need to feel that there's a tangible beginning and end point for a sense, a concrete sense of accomplishment and control. So when I do my 30-minute walk a day, I'm creating that beginning and end point, that success ritual. There's nothing more positive that you can do. You know, create a beginning and end point and get some tangible benefit than exercise in a time of uncertainty. If you'd like to join us, because we're going to be doing some group exercises, great. Thank you. Again, so the four C's, commitment, control, dealing with change, and conditioning. Those four characteristics distinguished the most party execs from those that were struggling more. Anybody want to comment, questions, anything from the group in front of me or for anyone outside? Okay. You know, I hadn't expected to go into psychological hardiness, but I'm so glad I did. These are three key leadership questions. I'll just read them. Are you courageously developing and passionately projecting your unique energy and experience, strengths, and skills? In a time, numbers, and technology-driven and distracted world, are you truly being heard, or are you just making noise? And finally, are you developing mutually productive and collaborative, diverse partnerships and team relations? To me, these are the three key questions that every leader, whether formal in title or informal, needs to be putting in front of them every day. Okay. Enough of my motivational pep talk. Here's a, sir, you know what would be even better if you could sit next to that young lady over there, because I'm going to make you all... Well, you know what? Maybe, yeah, you can sit over there, and then we'll have two teams of three. And if you have groups of three or more or two or more in the audience, let's do this teamwork, this team exercise. So here's the first exercise. Each of the three of you, you know, maybe you'll circle your chairs a little bit so you can look at each other more closely. Here's a familiar expression. There's no I in team. Tell me what you think that means. What does that mean for you? Talk about it for 2 minutes, two or three minutes. There's no I in team. Wow. What does that mean?
Just
with each other.
No, but I want to just tell you this. Just for human.
What?
Just for human, there's no I, but there's a M-E.
Okay.
Well,
I'm going to get there. We're going to get there. But let's just talk about there's no I in team. Now, and if anybody wants to respond from the long distance world, please do. Talk each other. Benita, you show up with your fellow colleagues over there. What does no I in team mean?
Look upon yourself. It's a team where you work together.
Talk to each other, talk to your fellow colleague. Okay.
I'm concerned about what happens to people online.
Ms. White is encouraging me to recognize that because we have so many more people online. Let's see if we can do this exercise. Still do this exercise, but do it more as like a kind of a discussion.
Okay.
So here, anybody, just quickly, what did you say? What did you come up with there's no I in team?
What we were saying is that basically it's a concept of everyone coming together, expressing their own ideas, being respected for their own ideas, and building something towards something in a unison.
Okay. Very good. And this group, did you get a chance, or you two?
Money.
What I said was the idea that since if we're all working together as a team, it doesn't matter how small or insignificant the task might be. If it needs to get done, then we all as a group in a collaborative, someone needs to step up and do it if it's for the good of the organization.
Okay. The question I was going to ask next, thank you, is what do you think about that expression, there's no I in team, from a diversity and inclusion perspective? And that's where this gentleman was anticipating where I was going, because that's the point. If there's no I in team, it can be really become more groupthink. You know, it's just one way to do it. Or just one or two people are the voice of the team. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm doing some work with the Nepali community, speaking of cross-cultural diversity. And one of the things I'm aware of when they get into, we have a meeting, because it's involving mental health advocacy. It started after the earthquake, if you remember the earthquake in Nepal. And one of the things I realize is there's a pattern that the experts or the senior people tend to talk, and the other people listen respectfully and probably too deferentially. And I recently pointed that out, and to the senior people's credit, they realize you're going to help facilitate us because they're not used to. So that was a great example of cross-cultural diversity where, and I, of course, mentioned that the knowledge being shared is very valuable. However, what are they encouraging? Passivity amongst their followers. And is that what we really want? Especially when one of the issues we're talking about is how to get more people in the Nepali community to open up and talk about mental health issues. You don't open up and talk about mental health issues if you're just listening passively. So this is where, in many different ways, cultural issues can affect our interpersonal and group dynamics and really impact the team concept. When I was talking to one of those battalions at Fort Hood, it came to me, you know, there may be no I in team, but there are two I's in winning. And these I's can see. Winning teams blend individual creativity and interactive community. I call them IC2 teams. Individual creativity and interactive community. And to me, that's the essence of a winning team. So I think it's, in terms of cross-cultural diversity, I really want to get past that. In fact, in the military, there's a wonderful concept. They call it helmets off. What does helmets off connote? Well, if you think about in the military, in the helmet, you have your rank. So what is a helmets off meeting? What might kind of meeting, what might be the goal of that kind of meeting? Helmets off.
The participants are of equal status.
That's right. No rank in the room. However, when the corporal is sitting with the colonel, is it an equal? No, of course not. And that's why some of the more progressive leaders were smart to bring out someone like myself to help facilitate a communication that can break down the status barriers. And so this is something we want to be taking into our workplace. And I'll talk more about how we create more helmets off, but real helmets off, group interaction, team interaction, branch interaction, because ultimately helmets off is the foundation for what? Cross-cultural diversity and inclusion. No helmets off, no real diversity and inclusion. Okay. Any comments?
Tyra Williams also said in Adobe, also helmets off is vulnerability.
And that's why good point. What's his first name?
Tyra Williams.
Tyra, good point, Tyra. And that's why some of the more progressive leaders realized they needed to bring in an outside consultant to help everyone feel less vulnerable. That is, if it was just based on the traditional authority, unless that leader has truly a gifted leader and has created a real sense of trust amongst everyone, it's going to be a challenge to get the colonel talk, the corporal talking with the colonel, candidly. In the Postal Service, for example, the head of the processing and distribution plant would meet every month with just maybe 30 frontline employees and first-line supervisors. No managers in the room, because he knew there was a contentious relationship between the managers, who were results-driven and weren't really focusing on what life is like in the trenches. And he wanted to hear directly from the people in the trenches. So there are things you can do to reduce the vulnerability, but you need to be aware that there is vulnerability. Okay. Now, let's take a look at these. I know people in the room. Oh, so you should be able to read this from distance, folks, because you're reading off the screen. So let's take a look at some of these. Having done some recent diversity work at NOAA and the Weather Service, I pulled together seven questions that I think are at least worth considering. Is diversity and inclusion a once-a-year mandated training or integrated into the culture? Is D&I a management checkoff? I think that's probably a fair question to ask. Is demeaning, harassing, bullying, or exclusion of especially lower-grade employees denied, tolerated, or covered up? Are job assignments, recognition, promotions based on qualifications, not only race or gender, is there an inner circle that gets favoritism? Do all have access to training, reasonable distribution of resources? Do any branches or divisions feel like stepchildren? No, that was a big issue. You know, one division seems to get all the resources, another division is sort of holding their hat out. Okay. I see heads shaking, so I'm nodding, so I'm assuming that there probably are other nodding going on virtually as well. Is there equal opportunity for all gender, racial, ethnic, age, and special needs groups to be heard and to advance? Now, here's number five is a kind of a complex one. Our personality, introversion, extroversion, and conflict, problem-solving differences recognized. When is this positive? When problematic? You know, we all take the Myers-Briggs test, and we, you know, when is it useful? But when can it be problematic? Well, just for the sake of time, because we only have about 10 more minutes, 15 more minutes. When I hear a supervisor or manager say, hey, I'm an introvert, you know, that's why I don't speak that much with my folks. To me, that's not acceptable. Not acceptable. You want to be a manager and a supervisor, and you know you're an introvert, doesn't preclude you from being a manager or a supervisor, but you also have to work on. That's like taking a computer class to upgrade your skills. You need to take communication classes to upgrade your skills, even if you are an introvert. So that's where, at times, I get a little nervous when people cling to their test score, so to speak. And the final one talks about, helmets off. I put out a kind of it's a book. It's a compilation of essays and poetry called Preserving Human Touch in a High-Tech World. Preserving Human Touch in a High-Tech World. And I can't think of a more pressing issue going on these days. It's no longer, if it is a high-tech world, it sure is. And how do we keep that human element? Why is this so important? Let me tell you about a study that I remember reading about. It was probably a few decades ago, because it was only involved male personnel on a submarine. And they were doing a test with these folks in small groups. And it was a problem-solving test, but, you know, but they began to see as they were going through the data that there was some really striking results. And that the more diverse and heterogeneous groups almost always were coming up with more creative problem-solving responses, where the more homogeneous groups were less creative. What's going on here? Anybody want to venture a speculation?
You mentioned earlier groupthink.
And I don't even know if it was groupthink, but you know what? It could have been also, yes, that's possible, is that when you have people who are on the same page, hey, we got the answer. It's quick. We knocked it out. They were almost prematurely coming up with answers because they were all thinking alike, where the diverse groups were sort of butting up a little bit against each other, creating some conflict, and they had to stretch their minds and problem-solving options to come up with a result that people could buy in.
But the group that were thinking alike, were they coming up with the best answers and
no.
the best solutions?
No.
I didn't think so.
Because partly because they came up, they were faster, they were more, you know, they came up with the answers quicker, but the more creative solutions were from the diverse groups. And I thought that was a very powerful piece of data. So that's why this is not just, you know, because we want to do the right thing, because we want to do the creative thing as well. And I think that's important. In this whole notion is two things. One, I didn't create. Acknowledgement does not necessarily equal agreement. Not everybody expects you to agree with them, but everyone wants to be heard. Feel like they've had a chance to put their ideas, their head and heart on the table. And I think that's critical. So that's, again, it gets back to the diversity. And then what I wrote is difference and disagreement does not necessarily equal disapproval or disloyalty. How do we create that helmets off culture that really allows for difference and disagreement without labeling it, you know, being disrespectful or disloyal? Or so, things to keep in mind.
Question.
Yes.
To me, also a key to that is with your helmet off analogy is that when the helmet goes back on, the people who have the authority have to not take it personal and realize that it was an exercise to bring about change and not being attacked.
You know what I'll say? Amen and women to that. So, exactly. And this is where integrity comes in, emotional awareness. How confident do I feel about my role as a leader? Or do I think this guy's trying to undermine me?
Mm-hmm.
Tough issues. Tough issues. And in good groups, we address those issues even before the meeting totally unfolds.
And the best leader might even say something like, you know what? I can't promise you that if somebody says something brilliant, and you know, I'm not going to feel a little envious. But I'm going to try to handle it as maturely as I can. Would that help build a sense of trust? If a leader could do that?
Yes.
That's what we need. Leaders, someone used, did you use the word vulnerable? Who said vulnerable? Ira said vulnerable.
I was thinking about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can a leader be vulnerable? You don't have to have the altogether mask on all the time. Because what does being vulnerable do? It doesn't make people think you're a weakling.
No.
It's that you have the courage to be real. And what is the example? What's the saying in the military? Lead by example. You're being a role model. So other people might take risk and share what's really going on. Because how do you really lead? You find out what's really going on, what your people at ground zero know, and that you don't when you're in the tower. Okay. You know, we're probably only going to have time for sort of half of my presentation, but hopefully at least it was interesting. Okay, what did I call the quadruple A? This is a summary of what we were just, those seven questions that we were looking at. And really, that it talks about that the organizations that encourage commitment, responsibility, and even stress resilience understand the quadruple A. And that is, first, they recognize people's authority, their expertise, their experience. That's acknowledged. That's validated. Second, autonomy. They allow them to exercise their experience and knowledge without micromanaging every moment. Without, if you make a mistake, you're finished. People are held, as we'll talk about, accountable, but making mistakes are part of the normal learning curve. Whether we can learn from that. If people become so afraid to make a mistake, they're going to be so afraid to explore and to experiment and to be creative. Third, accessibility. Does everyone really have access to people that have resources, information that's needed, training programs, accessibility? And finally, after you have authority, autonomy, accessibility, is everyone held accountable to a realistically high standard of performance? The quadruple A. And research shows that employees are more stress resilient when these four variables are put into play in the culture. Okay. Here's, especially in these times, and this is almost gets us back a little bit to the psychological hardiness concept that I talked about earlier. Times of uncertainty, we really need to understand the vital lesson of the four R's. If no matter what you do or how hard you try, results, rewards, recognition, and relief are not forthcoming, but you can't say no or won't let go because you've invested so much time, identity, money, energy, and especially ego in the one right way, one acceptable outcome, trouble awaits. The groundwork is being laid for apathy, callousness, and despair. Burnout is less a sign of failure and more that we gave ourselves away. One of the things I learned in working with all kinds of folks, but for some folks, this has become a crisis, this fear low experience. For others, it's not quite a crisis, but it's a period of stress and uncertainty. Definitely in a crisis, but even if it's only just, you know, one or two steps below, this is the time to do a real mental, emotional, and family inventory. Really ask the kind of the questions that normally we sort of push aside, you know. Am I doing what I really want to be doing? Am I moving in the right direction? Am I allowing myself to stay in toxic relations? Am I controlled by habits that really aren't so good for me? This is the time to ask tough questions. And maybe to recognize, you know what, I can't answer them all myself. And to think about, are there people or places where I can raise some of these questions and maybe get some support, some help? Just know that this is a tough patch that all of you are going through. And know that it's important to have some, what I call stress buddies. Everybody in a workplace needs a stress buddy. Someone you can really let your hair down with if you're still so fortunate to be able to do that. This gentleman and I, we're beyond that. But we're not beyond being stress buddies. We all need a stress buddy in these times. I just think this is a good exercise. We're not going to do it, partly because of what Ms. White, you know, said, but I will like to read it out because I think this is a good exercise, almost like a take-home homework exercise. So identify a letting-go experience that challenged your sense of self-esteem, status, and or power. What was a kind of a transitional separation, letting go experience that really shook the roots of your identity tree? What were the barriers to letting go of that person, place, thing, dream, idea? Why were you clinging so tenaciously? What were the bridges? What enabled you to begin to leave that rough situation, make some progress? Why is letting go in general so challenging in the personal and professional arenas? You know, I wrote a poem in preparing for this workshop. And I'm not even sure if it's finished, but I'll read it anyway, what I wrote. To accept the call of that horizon new, to risk the oh-so-comfort view, you must embrace the fear, the rage, the loss, and then let go, despite the cost of both pain and joy. To thine own self be true, for all that you have so been through. Some of my thoughts on letting go, the courage of letting go, the difficulty in letting go. Yet, there are times, and letting go doesn't mean leaving, but it means really doing some deep emotional reflection. So, on that note, I'm going to close before
I leave 5 minutes for questions, okay? So I'm going to share with you the secret of wisdom. Because we all can use some wisdom right now, right? So once there was a young woman who heard that an old wise woman had the secret of wisdom. And the young woman was determined to track the old woman down. And sure enough, after traveling many months, the young woman found the old woman in a cave. And she went in and said, "Old wise woman, I hear you have the secret of wisdom. Would you share it with me?" The old woman looked at the youth and said, "Yes, you seem sincere. The secret of wisdom is good judgment." "Ah, good judgment," said the youth. Thanked the mentor and started to leave, but he got to the entrance of the cave, paused, went back, said, "Old woman, I feel foolish, but I have to ask, how does one obtain good judgment?" "Good question," said the woman. "How does one obtain good judgment?" "Through experience." "Experience, of course," said the youth. And again started to leave, but she turned around, went back. "I really feel funny, you're foolish. How does one obtain experience, old wise woman?" "Now you have the right, now you've reached the right question," said the old woman. "How does one obtain experience?" "Through bad judgment. So, go out, make plenty of mistakes, and we'll all gain some wisdom from it." Thank you for this opportunity to share. And now I'm open to any questions or comments from our peanut gallery to our virtual audience.
Our operator, India, do you have anyone?
"Was I so dazzling that you're left speechless?"
"Ms. Holden said, please return. She'd love to hear about."
What's that?
"She said, you please return. She," and someone else said, "Thank you. This is a wonderful, wonderful meeting."
Oh.
And I must say, I've been around a long time. I was a CEO in my past life for 30 years. I heard a lot of presentations. Normally, I just want to get through it, but you did a great job.
Thank you,
you
sir.
You did a great
and
job.
From you, that really touches my heart.
I enjoyed it. I want your card before you leave.
Yes, sir.
Another person said, "Great information."
I don't know if people can hear you because you don't have a microphone.
I'll say it. They're saying great information. No. You haven't heard the expression, "Vanity, thy name is Gorkin"? Okay. Well, that's it. Bring me back.
Tyron said, "I think some of the ideas you expressed will assist with employee engagement and maximize performance."
Okay. And let them know the stress dock is rested and ready if they need any on-site facilitation.
Before we end, I mentioned earlier that we had the personality types workplace conflict and cooperation presentation, which was our highest participation rate, 939 or something like that. But what I didn't mention was the fact that particular session was conducted by Dr. Mark Gorkin, the stress doctor. Our highest participation rate was conducted by him, which was one of the reasons why we asked him to come back to do this particular presentation. He is, you know, very popular. He lives up to his bio in terms of being motivational and inspirational and
humorous. I'd like to say I'm a motivational psycho-humorist, and I'll let you all decide where the emphasis on that word should go.
So do we have anybody else on the line who wanted to ask any questions? How about here in the room? Do we have any questions?
There is a question here. "Although my mistakes are made, what if you cannot recognize what went wrong?"
Let's open that up, because that's a really good question. What if you missed it, but you can't recognize what went wrong?
But if you know it's a mistake, you'd already recognize what went wrong.
Well,
how would you know it is a mistake?
Well, okay, but maybe why it went wrong?
Yeah, more so why.
What's the who contributed?
Yeah.
How would you address that question?
I think you would have to go back and analyze the beginning of the process and walk yourself back through it.
I'm going to say yes and get a team together and discuss it with them. Get more, get those diverse submarine teams looking, get more eyeballs on the process.
Yeah.
Diverse eyeballs. Don't just get the managers looking at it. Get a cross-matrix team. So you get as many different perspectives on what's going on.
This Holden said ask.
Right. Ask for support and input. Good one.
We'll take time for one more question.
Ask and accept the responses, even if you don't like everything you hear.
And that gets back to our gentleman scholar over there who said, can the authority, after the group discussion, walk away without holding a grudge that, you know, that some of the things were said he didn't like or she didn't like, or that's where you, where leaders are so important in building trust.
Yes.
Yeah.
Tyra said again, in order to ask or figure out what went wrong, there had to be a sense of trust and sincerity.
Yes.
And there had to be an atmosphere that it is welcome. And I think that started in the beginning of the process.
You know, I'll tell you what one of the commanders who I got to know at Fort Hood, he really explained to me, Mark, it's easy to order people around. That's no problem. The real challenge is getting buy-in. And what he learned is that when he had group meetings, he really encouraged input from everyone. He wanted everyone to know that Colonel Phelps was listening to them. So when Colonel Phelps was in a situation where they had to move on a hill and he said, we're going to do it, everyone knew Colonel Phelps is thinking about me. He understands me a little bit. I can trust him. I can back him. That's getting buy-in.
Would you also agree that a great leader is also good at establishing relationships?
Absolutely. Maybe we should even, what is a relationship? Let's be really obtuse. What is a relationship?
A relationship is creating an atmosphere in which one can come and be able to represent themselves and feel comfortable doing it. An environment that is not going to be a got-you environment, but a respectable environment. I want your wisdom. I need your wisdom. Your wisdom is important to me. That builds relationships.
Anybody else want to throw in, what's your concept of relationship?
The feeling of being understood by the other person.
And for that to happen, what has to transpire?
The exchange of...
Of candid...
Right, feedback.
And it takes time.
Right.
It's one of the things we didn't get to is the Thomas Kelman conflict styles inventory. And they talk about the collaboration style, where over time you get to people's hidden agendas, their fears that they normally try not to expose. It reaches a deeper level of communication, hence a more intimate relationship. But what's the challenge about that? Takes time and energy. And in our, what's that?
Of course, overcoming fear.
Overcoming fear. And you have to have, in a TNT, time numbers, technology-driven world, smartphone world, who takes the time and energy to really do the kind of listening and sharing that really constitutes a genuine relationship. You know what my definition of respect is? Not putting someone up on a pedestal. Paying careful attention to a person's lived experience, emotional framework, and worldview. Respect is paying careful attention to a person's lived experience, emotional framework, and worldview. Okay, gang. I think that's it.
Great job.
Thank you.
Well, as we close and we want to do our thank yous, just before I do that, I do want to comment that when you talk about relationships, I think it's important to recognize the root word of relationship is relate.
Good.
And you have to be able to relate to people. And what they say resonate with you, what you say resonate with them in terms of you having common interests or common issues or common concerns.
And to see how the differences don't have to totally only divide you, they can challenge you to be more creative together.
So as we continue in our workplace, we want to make certain that we do what we can to build relationships, to have healthy relationships, and to appreciate those things that will enable us to relate to each other, which, as we do that, will extend to helping to create the reality of diversity and inclusion in the workplace. Thank you very much. Now, I want to thank India, our operator,
yes,
for today.
Please. Thank you, India.
I want to thank Ms. Dorothy Kinder from the Administration for Children and Families in Dallas, Texas, who takes care of our Adobe Connect. I certainly want to thank Sonia Keeve on my staff, who is our logistics coordinator.
Yes, thank you, Sonia.
And,
she was a delight to work with.
Thank yes.
You. Thank you.
Everyone speaks so very highly of Sonia. You know, customer service is our number one priority. And I want to thank all of you again for taking time out of your schedule. Any ideas, any recommendations, forward to diversity@hhs.gov. We have a link at the end of the slides for you to do an evaluation. It's a SurveyMonkey evaluation. Everything that we try to make sure that we have a means by which you can assess how effective we were in our delivery and presentation. So hopefully you will be able to take the time to do that. And shortly we will have this presentation on our max.gov page, where we have archived all of our lunch and learn sessions for your future use or sharing with your coworkers and so forth. But just being able to go back and listen on demand and help this to live in perpetuity. So with that, I want to wish all of you a great rest of the week and a meaningful Martin Luther King Jr. holiday, a day off, and not a day off, but a day on. And I want you to join us tomorrow if you possibly can, or on the 24th or 31st for our Martin Luther King Jr. series and our group discussion on that. Thanks again, and we'll look forward to you being with us in our next activity.
I'm sure, I know I couldn't have been as interesting without your presence. So thank you. You helped.